Home is an on-the-road runner.
Meep, meep.
An Atacarawax museum of rolling thunder. A grandstand of stand-ins and statues for fam. A Yosemite Sam I am of who I am and I ams. A smiley coyote keeping constantly busy like signals if you're on the other line. Being chased and chased by wasted time. Write till 6, procrastinate till 9. Miss that flight, get left behind. Home is pay-per-view movies and minibar wine. Head in the clouds, no corporate ladder to climb. Still a far cry from a Hollywood sign. I live out a suitcase half the time. Home is 20 cities in 25 days, 23 states and 8 states of mind. Different crowd, same rhyme. Stuck in a place where. Sorry, my mind must be someplace else right now.
Real Poets is an audio-only podcast that can also be visually read, like roses. Or when a director juxtaposes his or her most imposing reposes with characters, settings, and themes. Composed of thrilling soundscapes, highest of stakes, and dreams. Hosted by a duo of real poets about real poets and the real poetry they've written and the films that have been written about them and their work.
Join us each week as we talk to another real poet with something to say and how a real poetry movie influenced them in some way. Then we each write a new poem inspired by our most recent viewing of the film and share it with all of you. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to Real Poets. I am Renzo del Castillo, and with me, as always, is...
Scotty T. Scott with three T's. I'm taking it easy tonight. Did you know that, Renzo? I'm taking it easy, doing this podcast from bed. I'm undercover. I'm undercover right now. So, like, I'm a take-it-easy sleeper tonight.
Okay, and that's...
I'm excited for our guest. I'm just in a state of extreme comfort.
Okay.
I'm literally... in bed.
Well, I am glad you referenced our guest because today we are joined by Becca Joseph, founder of the Light in the Dark Fest, which is happening Saturday, February 21st and Sunday, February 22nd in Fort Lauderdale. She is a singer-songwriter of folk and electronic pop music. Her project is called Glowing Screens. And of course, she is a poet. I've met her before. I'm happy to call her a friend. Becca, how are you tonight?
Hey guys, I'm doing pretty well. It's been a pretty groovy Thursday, and I don't think I can top Scott being undercover, literally under the covers. I feel nothing can top that.
So Scott, why don't you just take a moment and tell us why you're an undercover brother today? Where are you right now?
I will tell you. I'm an undercover brother from another mother. The other one made a rubber sticky like butt in the gutter. I'm not a fire. I'm a lover, lover, lover. For Christ's sakes, I'm the color of fluff or nutter. I'm an undercover brother because I'm currently on a bit of a tour with Mayhem Poets. So both of you are in the sunny Florida area while I am currently in snowy Connecticut, just having driven down from Utica, New York. Following a bunch of exciting shows. You know, I'm getting to see the world. I'm actually seeing some stuff.
Big shout out to Mayhem Poets and your boys over there. You know, I love what you do with the schools and touring and sharing poetry with, you know, kids from varying ages, just introduce them to this wonderful art form that we love. You know, it's such an easy ride. And because it's an easy ride, we are going to be talking today about Becca's choice for a movie, Easy Rider. Becca, why did you choose Easy Rider? What was it that you wanted to dig into with the Real Poets tonight?
Well, first of all, thanks to you guys so much for having me on the podcast. I really dig what y'all are doing, and I've been tuning in just about every episode. Yeah, so Easy Rider. Okay, so Easy Rider is one of my favorite movies. Is it one of your guys' favorite movies?
No, but it's an impactful movie and I respect it a lot. Growing up with it, it wasn't something I grew up with. I think I saw it for the first time maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about you, Raven?
I was a little late to the Rider party as well.
And wait, did you say you watched it when you were in the womb or you were recent to it?
Oh, you heard it in the womb. I watched it in the car again while on this particular road trip with the Mayhem Poets. So like I'm seeing the countryside outside of the window, the snowy countryside, mind you, while our motorcyclists are also taking in some of the country. So it was a really kind of surreal experience, kind of alternating between the two. Yeah. And what I make of it is I enjoy it. It's not what I would do while I'm on the road. It's not how I guess interact with the world while I'm away, but it's definitely, yeah, interesting to see that. And I think appreciated, if you're not by a landscape that I was privy to in a movie theater on a screen, to be able to see some of these actual landscapes.
And I'll add to my comment as to why I respect it, right? Because I think along with Bonnie and Clyde and The Graduate, Easy Rider kind of helped kickstart that new Hollywood era during the late 60s and 70s, Becca, right? Like the major studios,
Love The Graduate.
Yeah, they realized that money could be made from low budget films made by avant-garde directors, right? So this is heavily influenced by the French New Wave, and the films of so-called post-classical Hollywood came to represent a counterculture generation, which was increasingly disillusioned with its government, as well as the government's effect on the world at large and the establishment in general. So I know it's an important film. It was just something that I just never really came across. And when I saw it, how can I put this? It's not a movie that I would watch to enjoy. Like, you know how you rewatch stuff?
Yeah.
Like I love Old Boy. I would not see that often, right?
Okay.
Because it leaves you destroyed. And it's the same thing. And we're going to dig into it, right? Like in this rewatch, just the themes that it brings up, the culture clash, the antagonism that is built. The parallels to today. It was a lot, but it's good to dig into it. But I want to ask you, why you mentioned this is one of your favorite films. What do you love about it?
Well, I study a lot about counterculture, starting, you know, with like maybe with the Transcendentalists or the Beatniks.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is just a quintessential look at some of the successes of the counterculture and then also some reasons why it failed. So, you know, I really dig the main character a lot, Wyatt. I mean, I think he has some shortcomings, but his personality to me is just so spot on. Like, he is just a righteous dude who's just kind of lost in kind of like a dystopia. You know, I mean, he does some things wrong, like in the beginning of the movie. You know, he's not perfect. He's just got this really sweet heart, and he's just kind of above all the bullshit. And he's just kind of like this displaced angel, like in like Jack Kerouac terms. Like, I don't know if you guys are too steeped in Kerouac, but Desolation
for sure.
Angels. Have you guys read Desolation Angels?
A while ago, but yes, I'm familiar with Kerouac. I like him a lot.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, like the Wyatt character, he really feels Kerouacian to me in that sense, just that timeless disillusionment with the modern world. Trying to escape somehow, but obviously failing miserably.
I love the word Carol, wiggity wiggity wacky. And I'm interested. Your lingo in particular, like, plays to me. Like, you know, you're using words like groovy and dude. You know,
yeah. It,
as something 60s, 70s. You said you studied counterculture, but what was kind of your gateway into this subject matter to begin with? Like, what piqued your interest into this whole movement from the get?
Mm-hmm. I love it, because usually when you hear those two words pair together, gateway and counterculture, that's actually not my cup of tea, but that's usually what it makes me think of. So what was my gateway? You know, I think some people are just kind of born to question reality and not accept it as it is. Just be like, wait, I think we could do better. Like, there's some good things happening here and we've made progress. But we could do so much better, and like maybe we could if we just try. Like, if we put the pieces together, we could just do something so much better. So I don't know when I started feeling that way, but definitely by the time I hit middle school, I was like, wait, what is everybody doing and why aren't we doing something else? Counterculture was just kind of a natural fit.
Right. So as early as middle school too. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Like, I teach a lot. I know you do as well. And I've taught, you know, I teach on the middle school level and the, you know, high school level. And oftentimes I ask the kids, you know, like, what would you be doing if you weren't in school right now? And like, years ago, it used to be go to the mall, you know, and more recently, over the last 5, 10 years, the number one answer is just sleep. Like,
oh God,
I'd be sleeping. You know, you get some video games here, but sleep. Whether that says that you know, kids are under-rested or whatnot, but that desire to kind of see the world, that does start a little bit later for people, if at all.
Yeah. Well, I could go down a rabbit hole of that. But I feel like both of those answers are kind of tragic, though. I mean, the mall or sleeping. I mean, isn't it kind of the same thing? I mean, you're kind of just a zombie to something. Right. I don't know. I mean, the mall is better, but it's still not like, I don't know. They should be somewhere else. Reading poetry. At least
there's some socialization. And yeah, which brings us to poetry, which like that can be done anywhere. You know, you could be doing there. For me, incidentally, while sleeping, shout out to me also still undercover, is a prime locale for me to write, like in the dream state or before waking up and that sort of thing.
Oh man, that can really mess with me though. Like, that's a trip, man. Yeah, my husband actually, he writes songs in his sleep. Yeah, he called the album Dream Pop.
That is a prolific, efficient man.
Right. Well, yeah, but there are all these like songs that he kind of feels like are like his sellout songs. Like he wants to like sell them to like John Mayer or something. Like they're not like what he would write if he was conscious.
Sellout songs, I like that. The SOS album, yes.
Yeah. So speaking of consciousness, right, these themes from the 60s counterculture obviously resonate with you. And, you know, when we met, you definitely have, I mean, I don't want to go as far, maybe you can correct me, to say that you are dissatisfied with status quo, but the things that you do, starting like Light in the Dark Festival, right? Trying to mobilize community. These are all things that are incredibly important to you. And I know that you've expressed them in poetry, but could you tell us a little bit more about this activism that resides within you and why you want to make a change?
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I mean, I guess starting in like junior high school, I just saw that everyone was kind of following each other. And there was basically like everybody was either following each other, or if people were getting bullied, like nobody was standing up. And if they were standing up, nobody was standing up effectively. Like they weren't able to do anything, not even the teachers. I just kind of started, I became very kind of like doing a deep dive on sociology, which is what I studied as undergrad too. Just trying to like, you know, understand social norms and why people do the things they do. Like, why do people sit in chairs, right? And now that we're in front of a computer all day, just destroying our body and our mind and our soul, right? This is like our new destruction. And we're all kind of victim to it. And we don't need to be, right? Like we could think of a better way. It doesn't have to be perfect. Like I think in the, you know, the 50s and the 60s counterculture with the hippies and the beatniks, they definitely took it too far. Like it was just totally radical, just too extreme. It was like, let's just abandon society and start a brand new society. And I think that is one reason why it failed as well, because that's totally unrealistic. But that doesn't mean that, you know, if people got together, that we could do something and make it fun too. Like, I feel like, you know, you mentioned the word activism, Renzo, and, you know, I feel like that word in itself has just become so loaded, which is so strange. You know, 15 years ago it was like, oh cool, you know. And I mean, there were like bipartisan issues and, you know, not more polarizing issues, but it wasn't such a loaded term. And now it's like, oh my god, what do you mean by that? So I want to clarify what I mean by that. And what I mean by that is always peaceful, nonviolent, and, you know, both inside the system and outside the system, largely through the creative arts. I feel like, you know, using music, dance, fiction, poetry, if done effectively, that can change the world. And it should change the world. We should be relying on that so much more than we are. So, you know, my love of art combined with, you know, challenging the status quo, I feel like those just fit hand in hand. And I know that you guys are all about that too. So that's why I just dig you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, do you feel You mentioned, yeah, the poetry world and that's a community. There is a freedom of expression within that realm. There it can
Great
often
question. Great
be
question.
accused of, sometimes, there's that preaching to the choir, but
Right.
like how can you get the environment filled with people that will listen but may not necessarily agree with you or are down to take something in?
Right. Such a good question. So I sent you guys that little taxonomy I made up about like what I think is effective art. But basically, I think that we need to try to do multiple things, maybe not at the same time and with the same people. So with some people, I think that we're not gonna see eye to eye on too much. Like, I mean, we'll agree that like love is important and good food and spending time with friends. And I think that art can bring those people together in a way where it's like kind of like an activity. I think somebody explained it to me like that recently, where it's like a fun activity of like, hey, like I might not get along really well with my neighbor. I don't want to know their politics, but we could get together once a year and have a vegan barbecue.
Right.
I threw in vegan. It's okay if they want to bring their meat. They can bring their meat. It's fine. I'm
Right?
not
Yeah.
like they might need it, you
I'm
know?
impossible meat all day, so I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like they should have their meat if they want to have it. And I'll eat it sometimes if I feel like I need it. So, you know, we could just get together sometimes. Other times, we should really focus on a group of like-minded people and really get to the bottom of our values and beliefs and see how much we can align on that. Or first see like where the commonality is. And try to cultivate that more. So music and art is a great way to do that. It gets people energized and kind of lets their guard down too, right? You can get to their heart, their mind, their soul. You can get to their body if they're dancing or whatever. So I feel like art is a great way to unite people in different ways.
You want people to hear, that's where empathy comes from. You want people to hear things that kind of challenge their beliefs or makes them question some things, but just getting them there to just to listen. Like my dream always is like, I've written a poem on I believe one thing, and somebody comes right up and they share their belief right after, but within a poem, and then maybe a fruitful dialogue comes in after it. But we both have had that freedom of expression to share it at that given moment in this style of art.
Right. Well, I feel like there's a few pieces there. So one is I'm thinking of groupthink. So the idea, you guys know groupthink, like people, like just the way they conform to whatever the masses. I think that's really terrifying. So I see a lot of that in any art scene where it's like, well, who is the person we should be like listening to, or how should we respond? Like, when should we snap and when should we clap? I don't know. I kind of want to look for the people who aren't clapping when everyone else is, or like you know what I mean, or the person in the movie theater that's laughing when everyone's quiet, because those people are not following, you know what I mean, like what other people are doing. So that's one piece to it. But preaching to the choir, I don't know. What do you think about that, Renzo?
I've been, privileged enough to have been one of your headliners for Light in the Dark Fest last year. And Scotty, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you're diving into is you have a message, and it's very easy to have a conversation with somebody who thinks the way that you do. But when you're and but when you're gathering people who may not think the way you do, but are open to hearing it and starting a debate or a conversation that could move forward, how do you do that? Is that
Their impulse is to not go to that event
So how do you get them there, right? You do something like what Becca does, right? You, which is she has poets, she has speakers, but she also has music acts, she has things that people can agree on to
For
get
sure,
them to the
for sure.
place. And then you start having discussions, you start having people speak their mind or perform things that have a certain viewpoint. And the people who went there to listen to some good music or eat some good vegetarian or vegan food or meat are going to be, in an environment that fosters communication. They're already vibing on one thing, and hopefully they can start vibing on another, at least have a discussion about it. Beck, I'm sorry, I think I cut you off. You wanted to say something.
No, well, no, I just want to say that I'm kind of I'm looking at my yoga mat right now, and I really wish I could be like sitting on it, but I think that may have been giving us bad reception. I'm just kind of like, I wish I was on it right now. And I'm just like, man, okay. Bringing people together, right?
Yes. Yeah. How to bring people together.
Oh, yes, yes. So yeah, this idea of like, so something that I've done a lot and like continue to do is I find someone that like I'm really vibing with and I'm like, oh, we got like this like platonic like soul connection or whatever you want to call it in a, you know, philosophical or psychological sense, whatever. We're like-minded people. And then there's a specific type of bias that we do. We like assume that we're more alike someone than we actually are. I used to do that a lot. And then I actually had this conversation with one of my friends and he was like, don't do that. He was like, you know, that space between you guys that is different, that you aren't connecting on, is like sacred. And that kind of changed my worldview. I was like, wait, oh, okay. Wow. So like, if, you know, there is some kind of higher order to everything and there's people that we're meant to meet, there's a reason why we're different than them and like why we're similar, but also why we're different. So kind of like bringing it
really
back.
Like that.
Thanks. So kind of like looping that back around the previous thought we were having about like, how do you reach people, right? Like if you're similar and if you're different, I don't know, just kind of focus on both. I think it kind of goes back to, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's making me think a lot of it. I mean, you know, Renzo and I are collaborating a lot more now too. And, you know, stylistically, our poetry can be different. But you know, we have so many of the same influences and interests and, you know, there's some slight, you know, personality differences, but yeah, we have such an artistic, you know, connection here. And it's been important that, you know, yeah, we each maintain, you know, kind of our own individual styles, but we're still growing, and learning from each other. Yeah. That's where, yeah. Learning and growth. And
yeah, that's what it's all about, man. Like growing, like, I feel like so many adults and older people, they're like, no, I'm not growing, you know, but I really want, a friend and a business partner, creative partner that's going to be like, hey, let me challenge you. Like, I don't want to just like kiss your ass. Let me like challenge you. And then we could like do something so much greater if I actually, right, you know, affirm you in some ways too, but then also challenge you.
Nice. I want to tie it in to the movie a little bit.
Yes.
You know, about getting people, you know, to a show or reaching those people, you know, like, it's been my dream to do like a show for, you know, like police or whatever, you know, like at a police precinct. This makes me think of like, it'd be cool, like for like a motorcycle gang, like an actual,
oh,
like,
God,
to do, you know, poetry within that realm and like work that strives to, you know, yes, appreciated by the poets, but yeah, like a motorcycle game, you know, can pull up and still extract and get something from that.
Okay.
So if you know, well, that, I think that was on Sesame Street, little Puns of Anarchy, perhaps.
Puns of Anarchy on Sesame Street with motorcycle games. Okay. Well, I'm going to jump in there because what that's conjuring up for me, I'm thinking Hell's Angels. I'm thinking hell, like you know, like people getting stabbed, Hell's Angels, like why the 60s counterculture died partly, you know, when they hired all the Hell's Angels for the bodyguards at the California, like the Woodstock of California in 1969.
I've read about it. I'm sure I've seen a documentary somewhere about this.
Yeah, they were like, well, it was just kind of, they were, you know, so there's a level of, I think it could work, but it also might not, you know, like depending on, I don't know. I mean, okay. So my buddy, Justin, who's the headliner of Light in the Dark, he plays in this band, Susto. He is Susto. Like he is, do you guys know Phosphorescent?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So he's opened up for Phosphorescent before. Nice. I'm actually a much bigger Susto fan than Phosphorescent, by the way, but he loves Phosphorescent. He got me into Phosphorescent. So he goes by Susto, even though it's like, it's sometimes it's just him. Other times it's a band, which is amazing as well. But he is literally like one of the only human beings I have ever met who could be the person that you're talking about there, Raven, like who could put on a concert or a poetry event for a bunch of motorcycle guys.
Mm-hmm.
Across the political spectrum, and they would all love him and it would work and he would just like figure out, you know what I mean? So like some people can do it. And I feel like he's one of the only people that I know that there's other people, but I just feel like he's that that person. Like that's coming to mind. So I think it is possible. It would just take a really strong leader.
Love it. If you were taking, you know, like a kind of cross country road trip, what would be your preferred vehicle of transportation?
DeLorean? No, those are really uncomfortable.
I mean, then you go different time periods, man. That's kind of cool.
I don't know, something comfortable, right? Sitting, my back is not what it used to be. So,
but you want big? You want big? You want you know, like a bed?
No, I'm not. I detest those giant cars for no reason, taking up parking spots when you're just trying to find a place to go. No, I think comfort and a good sound system for me. Motorcycles could be fun, but I know that I'd have my girlfriend telling me every day, "Don't kill yourself," so I wouldn't do it.
Right. So have either of you spent any time on a motorcycle, perchance?
No. Mm-hmm.
Not driving it, but riding in the back.
Right on the back. Right. Yeah, I think I've done the same, and you know, Vespas, but yeah, I've been also in the more fear category, you know, like if you're going to do it on such open road and, you know.
So right after college, I was reading all this Kerouac and I wanted to like hitchhike across the country and then like sleep out in the forest. And so kind of like in between on the road and the Dharma bums, like, I convinced my mother I was going to do this. And she was like, don't do that. It's not safe. And I was like, I'm going. And like, I was going to go, but they wouldn't let me. So I would say in an ideal world, like it would be communal, right? Like there'd be a lot of walking with a backpack, maybe some like buses. Like I'm thinking like the Merry Pranksters bus. So they were like the precursors to the hippies. Like they were in between the beatniks and the hippies, and they actually discovered tie-dye, but they like, they were kind of rebels without a cause too, which was kind of one of their problems, but they took a big bus cross country. And they were exactly what they say, pranksters. So they were kind of rebels without a cause, but it was just to kind of wake America up out of its vices and comas and things like that. So yeah, I'd say hitchhike in a safe world. Hitchhike with a mission, you know, like stop. My friend hitchhiked cross country actually, and he stopped at soup kitchens to like help along the way. I don't know, to do something, you know, where you're like, everywhere you go, you're making it better. Some kind of social action project, maybe with a bus.
I like it. A mystery machine.
Yes, a mystery machine. Wait, who said that?
Scotty.
Scooby Shaggy.
Oh my God. I could go down the mystery machine. But yeah, I've had some weird synchronicity with that. But we could talk about that later.
So I have a question for you. Because when I was watching this film in the latest watch,
yes.
You know, it's a lot of people understand this movie to be about rebels.
Right.
But Wyatt or Captain America, right? Peter Fonda, right. And Billy, Dennis Hopper, you know, you look at it and they have names inspired by Wyatt Earp and Billy the Kid, right?
Right.
So it's kind of reinforcing this image as anti-establishment rebels.
Right.
By
right.
Associating them with these old West rough and tumble types. Instead right. of horses, they're on bikes. This is definitely a Western, right? Immediately after they profit off the sale of cocaine that starts this movie, and we can talk about that in a little bit, Wyatt starts displaying the Stars and Stripes on his black leather jacket, on his helmet, on the chopper he buys. And I start seeing that as indicating their acceptance of the values of American capitalism, not a rebellion against them.
Right.
And I'll dig deeper into that, but I wanted to know what you guys thought.
So I agree and disagree. I think this is one of the, you know, contradictions of the, you know, the 60s counterculture at large. Mm-hmm. And this guy, I believe it was Thomas Frank, he called this like hip capitalism, which was showing, you know, like supporting market forces as you're trying to redefine them and not buy into them literally as well. So it's like this huge contradiction. And that was, you know, in every aspect of the 60s with the records and band tees. So I 100% agree. I never thought about it with this movie, but the fact that you're saying that, I can totally agree with that. And I'm not just agreeing to agree. I just,
I don't think you are. I don't think you are the type to do that, Becca, please.
Oh no. And, but yeah, no, I think that's really insightful.
Well, I'm going to go deeper into it. But Scotty, what do you think?
I agree. You disagree. Oh, well, to agree. pre Captain America, pre MCU as well. This whole thing pre.
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans, pre Chris Evans. Yeah, yeah. What's thematically what's coming to me is freedom. You know,
yeah.
and the idea of those that have financial freedom today. How many people, you know, sit on that money and don't even do anything? You know, there's some that just hoard their billions that could be doing so much good that aren't. Like I've been able to travel the world and not make a whole lot doing it. It's like the lifestyle would be like paid for itself, where like I, you know, getting paid to do where people would like put us up and we'd have, you know, food for the night, we'd have lodging, and then we would be able to give that type of service. So I mean, I feel like there's ways of getting around and doing that, this type of stuff, without tapping into the drug trade necessarily. To do it too.
Yeah, I think that's the I think both of these are the shortcomings, right? The materialism, the excess of drugs. These were, you know, the vices of why so much potential fails.
So for me, the reason this pops up is I don't want to say I'm haunted, but the scene at the end, or before the death, after the LSD trip, which is a crazy scene, where Wyatt just keeps saying that they blew it, right? They blew it, we blew it. And then I started thinking about the beginning of the movie, right? And when you see the beginning of the movie, it begins with Wyatt and Billy in Mexico. They're riding on dirt bikes to a bar where they're going to buy cocaine so they can smuggle it to the U.S. to sell for a much higher price. Their clothes are humble, their bikes are shitty, and they sell cocaine to their connection, which is Phil Spector, by the way, outside an airport.
Like, wait, Regina Spector's dad?
The producer of Wild of Sound fame.
Oh. I don't know if there's any relation.
Yeah, I don't think so, yeah. But like, what's their sin, right? So basically they're just buying a commodity from a producer and selling it again at a higher price to obtain profit. Those guys are capitalists, right? Wyatt and Billy sell the cocaine they bought in Mexico to their American connection for much, much higher price. And maybe that, to me, points to their exploitation of the poor Mexicans they bought it from, right?
Right.
And then as you're seeing that, we hear Steppenwolf's cover of Born to be Wild as Wyatt is stuffing dollar bills down a plastic tube hidden inside his U.S. flag design chopper, which, again, I see as a symbol of American capitalism. And Wyatt and Billy are just as much the establishment in that moment as the people who antagonize them later. So when we see these two cool dudes riding their choppers down the road and we're hearing Born to be Wild and we're seeing like the credits roll and Easy Rider pop, the contradiction isn't between the right and the left for me. Again, it's both sides here, as I mentioned, are capitalists. It's between conservatives and liberals. And I think that's a distinction that's important to make, because I think some people confuse the left with bourgeois liberalism, right? The hippies, etc. And I think it's significant that this is happening because Wyatt and Billy are both establishment, the commercial capitalists, and they're anti-establishment, the bike rebels, at the same time. And I think this duality and this inability to reconcile is what leads them down this quest, this path, where we're going to meet Jack Nicholson, where things are going to happen. You know, these guys are super rich. They're sitting on a bunch of money, but they end up living like the homeless because of the way they look. It just pulls up all of these, maybe the reasons why the counterculture was not successful, the counterculture movement was not successful, and it's embodied in that scene with Wyatt saying, we blew it. He was dead before he died, for me.
Wow. Okay, so that's a lot. So, oh my God, my brain's going in so many directions, but first of all, the part about, I want to highlight the part where we blew it, and then also the exploitation. I think those are two themes I pulled from what you said. So first, I think that in terms of you saying that like they exploited the people that they bought the drugs from and I think you were kind of saying it was like karmatic to some degree, right?
I'm saying it could be seen as that, right? Like I'm saying whoever looks at them as biker rebels fighting against capitalism, I would say they're wrong. I think these guys are super capitalist.
Okay. Yeah. Agreed. So I think that from my perspective, I think you're right in the sense where they are definitely guilty and exploiting and not doing enough by any means. I mean, this is a specific like sect of 60s hippie counterculture. So, there were people that were in like the civil rights movement, the women's liberation movement, Students for a Democratic Society, SNCC. And then there was also the anti-war people and, the hippies and different factions of hippies. So this is a specific faction, and they're kind of stereotypes. So first of all, I don't think that Billy, in my opinion, is very cool. I think he's kind of an idiot. I think he's kind of an idiot. I think Peter Fonda's character is the smart, philosophical, intellectual, who's trapped in a system that he just can't get out of, and he's not able to figure out how to live better. So in that terms, I think that from a critical race theory lens, I think they're definitely being, the white guys exploiting the, lower income people of color. Definitely. That's definitely happening there. And they shouldn't be doing that. It's horrible. And then at the same time, from like a Foucauldian, like post-structural lens, I think that they are also kind of exploited themselves by the confines of conformity and society and this kind of like Babylon of materialism that they can't shake. So I think like both are happening at the same time. And I think that when Wyatt says we blew it, I mean, that gives me total like Kerouac vibes. He's recognizing that like they had a chance to try to do something better. And they just, they lived like in kind of this like folk hedonism way, just like sex, drugs, rock and roll, even though you can tell Peter Fonda is this really sweet free spirit who could be capable of moving mountains, in my opinion.
We need to recognize too that Jack Nicholson's character, who's a lawyer they meet, and we'll go into that as well, he died being bludgeoned by an attack they suffered, right? So this realization comes after that. And I think it signifies that the death of the dream, that their realization, their pursuit of freedom, what is freedom, right? It led to destruction. It didn't lead to liberation. Scott, you were going to say something.
I mean, I was viewing the lens of, I wouldn't necessarily call him an idiot or an idiot. I'm viewing the characters through the lens of like the id and the ego. Billy being all id, Wyatt more like ego, just like that raw desire that anybody can fall into at any given time. And then, I don't know, it's super ego, like being the society out there and those things, but viewing it a little bit through that, especially through the drug lens. Ego, Wyatt trying to maintain a balance and keep Billy's lack of his impulsivity, under some sort of control.
Yeah. I mean, I like Billy a little bit, but he's just kind of like the stereotypical, like stupid stoner.
Right, all id.
Oh, he's your friend that gets you in trouble, right?
Maybe like somebody reminds me of someone from high school that like never left high school.
The death of the dream. You guys want to talk a little bit about this film as freedom versus reality, right? I think, the motorcycles, what they're trying to achieve, the drug use could be ultimate freedom, but Wyatt and Billy and I'm blanking on Jack Nicholson's name here. I'll remember it. And George, they're constantly threatened by those societal norms they're attempting to reject, right? Like as they keep writing, like at first those motorcycle montages are like freedom and they get repeated and repeated, and it just builds up this tension because everywhere they go, people look at them differently. People start acting differently towards them, and it just, the tension ramps up until we see their murder at the end of the movie.
Right.
What is freedom?
I don't know. I kept thinking about this, and I feel like to me the word freedom doesn't quite seem like the right word. I feel like free spirit feels more of the right word. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know, because freedom could just be such a serious word, you know? And I feel like, I don't know. I'm just kind of grappling with it.
Put that back on yourselves as to what is freedom to you? What does it mean to be free for you? Wow. And then compared to theirs. I mean, like I started with saying with like the kids, you know, like their freedom from school, or this is, you know, like they would just sleep, like that's their freedom. Like what would be your freedom if, you know, you're not, yeah, I mean, you're not working a nine to five necessarily. What you're able to travel at any given time, and that changes over time. But at this point in your life, what is freedom?
I feel like the quote, the Bob Dylan quote, a hero is someone who understands the responsibility that comes with his freedom. Okay. I feel like that's the piece that is lost. Maybe in this movie or definitely lost. And,
right.
You know, this idea that like freedom should be for us when we think about, you know, like the history of America and just the current realities and how people don't have the same freedoms. I think that anybody who has, you know, anything should be helping spend their time to get other people, you know, the resources and the protections and the, you know, a better quality of life. Like, you know, we think about like unhoused people living on the streets. Why are we not spending our time trying to fix that? Like, you know, and through music and art, we could start to get people to, you know, change culture first so they could think about it differently.
Yeah. And giving them a voice within it as well. I mean, Renzo, your idea of freedom, and then how that relates to even the film too, for today?
An operational definition of freedom could vary on the day. Am I free to travel? Am I free from worrying about paying a mortgage or rent or for food? When I think about this movie, what it brings up for me is freedom versus tolerance, right? So you guys remember the diner scene? Where they're denied service, Wyatt and Billy are denied service solely for how they look.
Right.
So right. To me, that scene, I mean, they didn't really do anything wrong. So I asked myself what this scene reveals about the difference between freedom and tolerance. And what I get from this movie, what I think it's trying to say, maybe seen through my prism, is freedom is tolerated only until it disrupts comfort.
Mm. Right?
So we have these societal norms that are in place and everybody's free and everybody's good. And the second someone disrupts that comfort, disrupts the status quo, disrupts business as usual, well, then it's a threat. And then they have the freedom to get rid of that threat. And that's a terrifying thought, right? At least for me. So yeah. I don't know. I'm still forming my thoughts around that, Scott.
That is a terrifying thought. Raven, you got something you got a joke for us?
Well, no, if we switch, we can let that marinate. Another question I that sets us down a little slight different path is, do either of you have a favorite stretch of road that you've traveled to? Like, either, you know, a specific highway or a bridge from your travels.
Oh, what's that one in California that sounds like music?
Oh, I mean, I was going to say the same thing. If you're from SFO to mm-hmm. to Carmel.
Because you're riding over bumps and it just sounds like a song. I love that stretch of road.
Oh. my one is on the Pacific Coast Highway.
Oh, where yeah.
From SFO to... to Carmel by the Sea, and just, you know, like you're seeing the topography change pretty frequently, but like I just remember passing pregnant seals, you can pull over and you see like there's just seals all out of water. You can't get too close, and at a particular time of year, they're actually giving birth. I mean, it's quite incredible, and I just remember just, you know, could take a flight, but always wanting to drive past that. My friend Mason had this one idea too of like he was driving down the roads, that particular stretch of highway, and for a period of time he put a camera on the car. And you know, if we talk about those that don't have the freedom to drive anymore, though they don't have the freedom to get on a motorcycle to even get in a vehicle. My dad in particular, you know, can't drive anymore. Imagine being able to, and you can do this more now, like, yeah, you can see through this film, but you know, having kind of like, all right, like a, whether it's a virtual reality experience of you seeing open road, being able to see some of the best drives, you know, certain treadmills do that where you can kind of like run, you know, through downtown San Francisco or run, you know, through cobblestone streets and that sort of thing. You see it on the screen, but.
Yeah. The Pacific Coast Highway is a good pick. Yeah, that's super cool. I think I saw some dolphins when I was there. But what you're saying makes about the digital screens, I will add that that would be my least favorite road. And there's actually a term I learned recently called euteria, which is a sense of oneness with the earth. And then there's psychoteria or psychoteratic illness, which is the mental and emotional state of being removed from nature and like the terror that it causes us spiritually and psychologically. So I feel like, you know, one of the themes too of Light in the Dark is environmentalism. And I think that's kind of fits back with the movie too, in addition to the open road, but, you know, people choosing to spend more time in nature, or having the privilege to do so and to remove themselves from the glowing screens and the devices. So I think my place would be, go ahead.
No, let me hear your spot first.
I think that, you know, the place would be just, I don't know, just kind of a something that's kind of gnarly. Like, you know, one of my spirit animals is a monkey. I think yours is too. Raven, because I read one of your books and it said when you were little, a monkey was your spirit animal.
The monkey, and then sure.
We're both monkeys for sure. Like, I feel the monkey energy. so like anything that takes me to the jungle, is like my spirit. So if there's like, you know, like the trees are all mangly and like not really, groomed or whatever the word is, pruned, like that kind of spot is, my open road, which is, you know, just kind of, and I like the desert too. I'm from New Mexico, so.
Oh yeah, big sky.
Yeah, so just somewhere where there's not like a eco-consumerism, you know, where you're not just going there to take the photos, but you're just there to kind of have the experience, you know, and be, you know, in the zone and not consuming it for a later good. So,
right.
Yeah, one of the desert would be one of them, or the jungle. I don't know. The beach down here is pretty good too. So walking and driving around the beach is pretty elevating and doesn't get much better than that.
Just to insert, you were saying to get away from screens, but like the intention behind my guy's project, you know, a while ago was to kind of create that virtual reality experience, though, where like there's little distinction from you thinking that you actually are on the road, like, you know, like if you are in a VR headset and you have that on all three sides. Now what's lacking, of course, is all of the senses, you know, but and it seems like, you know, we were going down that road towards virtual reality, but now it's moved more towards AI, but like the virtual space of, you know, being somewhere without being there, you know, and whether you could smell the trees and you know, touch, like simulate that while you're going through.
But you know, do you guys know simulation theory? Are you crazy?
Somewhat, yeah. I think I saw that doc on the people that believe the Matrix is real type
deal. Yeah, because you're always compared to Keanu Reeves, right? That's what you're... Oh, God. Yeah,
well,
but yeah,
John Wick and Jesus, I get actually.
Wait, you get Jesus too? Oh my God! Okay, so my buddy Johnny, who's also in Susto, he plays with them. Your dancing reminds me of him a bit. He gets Jesus all the time too. So that's really cool. But yeah, okay. So just fun fact about him, by the way, in terms of this. So he has released some really good stuff about AI. And, you know, leaning to the, you know, the criticisms of it and looking at some of the complex issues of it. But then he got accused from The Atlantic on the 4th of July of being AI. And his theory is potentially, and this is, you know, one of his theories that I read or heard in one of his podcasts. Is that maybe, and I might be getting it wrong, Johnny, if you're listening, so sorry, but something that he thinks we're potentially already advanced AI, like we are AI. Mm-hmm. So like the joke is actually on us if we're, you know what I mean? Like it's like the Matrix and the synchronicity has already kind of looped. And I mean, this stuff is way out there. It's just a thought experiment, but sometimes it's intriguing to ponder.
Oh, yeah. No, I believe it to a degree that, yeah, like we got to this point another time where this is a parallel universe.
Yeah,
that,
right.
That an AI has created they keep doing it. With a little less imperfections this time. Still quite a few horrible atrocities throughout the course of time. But whether like, yeah, there's the great reset every.
Yes. Oh, my God. Exactly. And like, yeah, I get that vibe from you that you're like, you're on that kind of matrix.
Yeah, my imagination can go there, you know, I mean, right. I guess practicality and, you know, like certain things will kick in that will talk me out of it. But I love to go there just with the mind.
In a good way. Yeah. And like every time I'll be ready to talk myself out of that, these like mind altering experiences that literally like knock me to the floor will occur where I'm just like totally spooked out. And like, I'll be like, you know, like that was just all in my head. I got carried away. And then something will happen and I'll be like, oh my God, like the Matrix is like on the nose. Like that's too weird to be synchronously. Like something is happening. Yeah.
Shout out to Keanu. I just caught on the plane, that movie, Good Fortune. I don't know if anybody saw it, where he plays
I saw that. Yes.
And there's so many parallels to our first episode of Real Poets, Wings of Desire. There's quite a few similarities. Worth a check.
Did you like it? What'd you think of it?
Yeah, liked it much more than I thought. Keanu, very very funny. I mean, there was a couple moments. I really found it very funny.
You know, I'm wondering, is there an equivalent to what would be the equivalent now of the 60s counterculture movement or an easy rider these days?
Ooh, well, this is something my husband and I have been discussing since the day we met. so like a little, like too much, honestly. Sometimes we're like, we need to talk about something else. But we think it would have to do with like a deep challenge to social media and AI, but through music and art. And then, you know, just being really peace and love too. I feel like, you know, peace and love is really not cool right now. And people are really angry and they, you know, they should be, but I feel like we're still directing our anger in the wrong ways. Like we're directing it at each other still and not in the most effective way, like to, you know, to generate the positive, like the vision, right? It's still just like the anger, but it's not the vision. But I guess I'm kind of replicating that by saying that.
I'm just trying to figure out, like right now my mind goes to what soundtrack what's the music and the soundtrack for this modern version, right? Because the movie was financed with movie made from the Monkees. It has Phil Spector in it. Yeah, the Monkees helped finance this film. And then it has, what's on the soundtrack? I mentioned Steppenwolf, Jimi Hendrix Experience, The Birds, The Band. And you I think that originally came from
Bob Dylan, too. Bob Dylan,
yeah.
Yeah, he covered it.
And then,
yeah, I mean, I was trying to think about that too. Like, do you score when you travel? Do you try to score the places that you're at, or that comes in retrospect?
No, music is a huge part of me traveling. I always try to go into the place. Like, whenever I visit a place, I always stop at a vinyl store and get something I can't buy anywhere else but there, mm-hmm. because it's music from that. And then I can't listen to it because I don't have a vinyl player, but I look it up and I try to hear it. And then there's always songs that stick in my mind when I go to a place. Like, music is a big part of how I think through things.
Right. But there's so many songs that now, even that have been written about. You type in any small city that there's a song for, like on Spotify, that you can find it. And I like doing that, even to a degree. But what captures the spirit of the moment can vary pretty wildly. I mean, I'm listening to podcasts mainly on a lot of road trips.
I wanted to add that I think it's like Mickey Dolitz of the Monkees. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Mickey. Yeah, Mickey was my imaginary friend when I was 4.
Aww.
And he was kind of like a mashup with my cousin too. But like, I loved the Monkees when I was 4, and he was my imaginary friend. We used to hang out. Yeah.
Easy Rider's in your DNA.
Wow. Wait. You had an imaginary friend who was a real person, but just you imagined it.
The guy from the Monkees, not Davy Jones, whatever. Mickey was like,
know Mickey Dolenz. Yeah.
It's kind of obscure because everyone knows, you know, if they even know, but that's just kind of a fun fact that I'm like thinking about, but
Liking Howie instead of AJ. It's all good.
Wait, what show is that? Doogie Howser?
Howie instead of AJ? Those are the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, God. Okay, I'm thinking Doogie Howser, man. The Backstreet Boys. Oh, my God.
You know, you mentioned Bob Dylan, and I was thinking about it, but Bob Dylan was reluctant to use his own recording of It's All Right, Mom, Only Bleeding, right? So it was actually performed by Roger McGuinn from The Birds. That's the version that was used in the movie. And then instead of writing a new song for the film, Dylan wrote just the first verse of Ballad of Easy Rider and told the filmmakers, hey, give this to McGuinn. He's going to know what to do with it. And McGuinn completed the song and performed it in the film. So while we hear Bob Dylan music in the film, it's not him. Not on the soundtrack anyway.
Right. He just wrote it. Yeah, some of it. Yeah, I love that you know that.
Well, it's interesting because I would love to know why he saw this movie and said, you do it, you know,
right?
Or like, and still allowed his music to be used, but backed off from being a part of it in terms of performing.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I know about the soundtrack to this movie is that, you know, you guys familiar with CSNY, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young?
Yes.
Okay. So originally, Peter Fonda wanted them to write an entirely original soundtrack for this movie.
Oh, wow.
But it didn't happen because I think the editor edited the footage much more closely to temp tracks, which ended up being the soundtrack. And people just got used to them and loved them with the material. So they had that. And then Dennis Hopper, who was the director, increasingly got more control over every aspect of the movie and decided that he didn't want Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young behind Peter Fonda's back. And I wrote this down because the quote was just classic, insane Dennis Hopper. He told the band, look, you guys are really good musicians, but honestly, anybody who rides in a limo can't comprehend my movie. So I'm going to say no to this. And if you guys try to get into the studio again, I may have to cause you some bodily harm.
Oh my God.
So Rats. I guess it's all about love in the counterculture, I guess.
Oh, man.
Wow. Well, that was Dennis Hopper, though.
Dennis Hopper.
He gives me those vibes, though. Yeah. Like, you know,
yeah.
Intense person. He was an intense person.
Well, did you guys hear? I was actually just looking up this morning. I was looking up something about Easy Rider, and apparently, I hope this isn't a rumor because I don't want to be spreading rumors, but it appears that Dennis Hopper banned Peter Fonda from coming to his funeral or something like that because.
Oh, damn.
Because of a fight. I saw there was
some volatility between them. Yeah.
Yeah. It was about money and like status. And so it looks like it got super meta there with the contradiction. Wow. Yeah, I know. Something like that. But I was like, oh, okay. I think it's true. It seemed, I don't know. You guys can research it and go down a little
round. Seems plausible.
Well, I know we have to start wrapping up just based on the time. Yeah, yeah. But
what other kind of mentions or of poetry do we like directly of poetry in this movie? Can we find? Is it through the music? I stylistically, it's definitely poetic with you know the drug addled scenes there. But is there any like written verse? What other are there other poets that are actually shouted out?
Poets or poetry?
Both.
Yeah. So the part that, like, you know, when you guys said you were doing a poetry podcast about a movie, I thought of the scene. I feel like they're in a cave, but maybe they're not. In my brain, they're in a cave. But that's with Jack Nicholson, right? And he's actually talking to Dennis Hopper, right? And the part where he says, he's talking about, you know, being a free spirit. And he says that people are going to, you know, be scared of you because there's some people that talk it and then there's other people that live it. And when they see someone who's living it, that's dangerous. So that part to me is like one of the main poetic moments.
Well, Seamus Heaney, right? Have you guys read Westering?
No.
So that poem was originally titled Easy Rider. And it explored themes of rebellion and American road trips. He wrote it after his 1970 arrival in Berkeley. And it kind of captures, I mean, I'm not going to quote it, but it captures the essence of like the film's road trip freedom and the underlying dangers of that era. And if you remember, Easy Rider came out in 69. So I think he was heavily influenced by that. And then the film has just a bunch of open roads, nature, and wordless emotional connection between some characters, like the commune scene, right? With the two hippie girls and the guy who was with them, who lets them in and kind of shares them with Wyatt and Billy. And then the film is, I think, there was this poem called Adam Aitken, who was also influenced by E.C. Ryder in some of his poems as well, if I remember. But I do want to get maybe some parting thoughts about Easy Rider and its impact on you, its impact on society, anything that comes to mind as we start getting ready to share our poetry.
I think just the vision, you know, is trying to find artists, you know, filmmakers, poets, musicians that, like I said, you know, that are some of the greats. And that's what I'm trying to do with Light in the Dark. Like, I believe that you guys are definitely some of the greats and I can feel it. Wow. And you guys are two of the best poets in Miami and around here. I can think of a handful. I can think of you guys. I can think of Omavi Waite, who is amazing and will be doing poetry at the festival. You guys should check him out. Maybe you can get him on the podcast. He is
love to
amazing. Yeah. I feel like, oh, and this new guy I met recently, he goes by KG. That's one of his names. He writes about technology, and I'll have to introduce you guys to him at the festival.
No, he didn't.
Do you know him?
No. I was making a Mortal Kombat reference.
Oh, I didn't even know this, but no, he's incredible. So I'd say, yeah, the four of you guys are the poets that I believe are great down here. And I've heard a lot of poets, and there's some other really good ones too, but I feel like you guys are, I'd say you four are the best that I've encountered with my values. But
it is nice of you to say, and I want to comment a little bit off of that, to be like, of our poets identified by their region, you know, like by their locale. Because I, you know, me being relatively new to Miami, I'm only just beginning to starting to write about, you know, this actual region. But it is important to have that sense of place and that sense of home in one's writing, whether, you know, you need to travel, but some degree, I guess, of foundation with which everything can be connected to. Like, Renzo, you feel firmly footed in Miami now too, right? Having spent most of your life here.
I think I do. I think Miami is home for now.
But all the branches of your travels fuel the writing as well.
Mm-hmm. Right? But there's Miami's a, for me, it's a perfect blend of everything. It's a port city. It's a center for migration. It's a mosaic. So
yeah,
a lot of the world is represented here more than other places that I've been to. But I do, before we move on to the poems, I do just want to call out Jack Nicholson in Easy Rider is one of those rare cases where a supporting role completely steals the film and becomes iconic, at least for me. He plays, as you mentioned, George Hansen, who's a small town ACLU lawyer. And this performance, before it, he was a working actor. After this movie, he was Jack Nicholson, right? He had an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. He was a new Hollywood anti-hero.
And was Cuckoo's Nest after this?
It was after this. And then you have like this drunk, brilliant, disillusioned Southern lawyer who joins Wyatt and Billy and joins them on their quest getting out of jail. And he represents, at least to me, intellectual freedom, but he has political awareness and he knows what the cost of nonconformity is, right? If you remember the campfire monologue, he says, "They're not scared of you. They're scared of what you represent."
What you represent.
And to me, yeah. And that line explains the entire movie to me.
Yeah.
So I just, that move between comic relief and existential dread, which kind of becomes one of his hallmarks in his career, I think really help his death hit really hard because Hansen is the only character who truly understands the danger that they're in. His murder confirms his warning. And it also, I think, signals the death of the 1960s counterculture optimism, right? This is what leads to Captain America Wyatt saying, "We blew it." And it goes from a road adventure to an existential tragedy. So big ups to Jack Nicholson. I do want to make sure that we give him his flowers for this movie.
Oh yeah. Fantastic performance. Are you the type of guy that, like, say you're a journalist, and you're writing about climbing Mount Everest, you feel in order to write about something, you would have to climb Mount Everest, or you could effectively get it by interviewing or talking to somebody who has climbed Mount Everest? You know, could you write about motorcycle culture without actually getting on a motorcycle? Or do you have to immerse? And I guess it's different for each person, but I prefer to be doing the thing, to be immersed in the moment. But there's still a detachment for the writer to be able to reflect upon it. I can think of so many other situations where that's kind of been the case. Can you accurately reflect on something without actually doing the thing that you're writing about or commenting on?
Becca, would you like to answer?
Well, yeah. A few things there. I think there's a few pieces to that. One, you might not want to do the thing, right? Like, sometimes you want to not be where you are. Like, when I fly, sometimes I don't really want to be flying. So I, like, I'll listen to, what's the song? Fight Test by the Flaming Lips on repeat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love the Flaming Lips.
I'm a huge fan.
That album, like, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots?
Yes.
I love that song. And yes. Flight Test is amazing too.
Yeah, those are my favorites. And you know, it was actually like a ripoff of Cat Stevens.
It's okay. We're putting that out. We're putting Flight Test in the soundtrack for the new Easy Rider, for the modern Easy Rider.
Oh yeah, gotta put the pink robots in.
I think we're gonna need some more electronic mix in there, but that's my theory. So where were we? What were we talking about?
Immersing into something.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, it became very controversial in the literary world around 2014 to be
taking on a perspective that's not yours.
Yeah.
And I still think that, you know, sometimes people can do that. And, you know, like, why? You know, sometimes it is like, why? What are you doing? Why are you not speaking what you know? You know, sometimes it could be a little like tone deaf, I guess. But other times, I think people should be able to have the creative freedom to be like, I'm going to be a robot in my book, you know, and you don't, I don't have to actually be a robot, but it could be like,
well, yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, yeah, in terms of that, like, I remember Johnny Depp who like moved in with Hunter S. Thompson to be able to play him in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like lived in his basement for a while. And,
wow. That's and, another one of my favorites. Wait, didn't he do that? Wait, who did that? Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp, yeah.
I heard that, what's his name? Jim Carrey. I think he did that with Andy Kaufman.
What? Like, Kaufman was dead.
He like pretended that he was.
Right, right. He totally.
Oh, he went full method.
Even when the cameras stopped rolling. That he'd done, you know, yeah, like now we're getting into like act, you know, like the acting of it, and that's a big part of, you know, my approach to things too. But I'm thinking of like the accurately portraying something in writing, you know, how deep you have to go to be able to accurately to really represent something.
Well, now you can just have AI write it, so you don't have to know anything. And
They haven't had those actual experiences themselves, the robot.
Or maybe they have.
True.
To be determined.
Well, I think if it was me, I would prefer to do it so I can give a firsthand account. But it's a question of empathy. If I can remove my ego and truly listen to someone's account, I think I could represent it.
Yeah. But, yes. That's well said.
Right, right. I just like doing it though, doing it side by side with the person. They're still them and I'm still me, you know, but like, even if you're like, yeah, you're getting to know it from the inside, closer from the inside.
Right. I'm thinking about that one movie. Wasn't it like with Natalie Portman and it felt a bit David Lynch, but it wasn't David Lynch. She was like doing some method acting and she started like becoming the other woman. I don't know. It was good.
Oh, with Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
It was recent. Yeah. It was very recent. I think they were nominated, both of them, for an acting award. The movie that comes up for me is Almost Famous. The Cameron Crowe.
Sure. Billy Crudup.
Cameron Crowe character going out with Stillwater, who is basically Led Zeppelin, right? Like, can he write about music without touring with them, right? As an example, but I digress.
I digress.
Are you guys ready to share some poetry?
Let's hear some poetic works.
I'm prepared to move forward.
Doctor, please, I'm actually really excited to hear your poem, Becca. Could you bless the mic with your poem, please?
All right, here goes. Easy rider in a diner. Jeremy Wyatt blurred as one with childhood saints. Trying to escape, we're only hashtag saved. Matrix of Zuckerbergian aneurysms. A bit on the nose on the 4th of July. Freedom, rumors spreading of AI. Who will help us out of the crowdsourced panopticon? Visions of Susto and Johnny Angel through the desert haze. I want to be where the bad boys run, but fighting is such a bore. Give me a place where the people love and we lay down our guns at the door. That's it.
No, I'm snapping over here. I don't know if you can hear it.
I could not hear.
No, thank you for sharing that.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to what you guys wrote.
Scotty, you want to go next or you want me to go next?
Sure. I got some thoughts. Renzo, do you remember the last road trip movie we watched actually together?
Last road trip movie?
I was thinking about it, yeah.
Sisu?
Yeah, kind of.
no, you did not.
The one I was thinking of was Will and Harper, actually.
Oh, okay.
And there, you know, some similarities, I guess, in kind of some of the regions with which they're going and how they're kind of viewed and that sort of thing. That is basically traveling on a road trip cross country with his writing partner, who has since transitioned from a male to a female.
Okay. It's a documentary we were lucky enough to catch when we were at Telluride, and you can see it on Netflix. I believe it's there, Becca, if you want to check it out.
Yeah, I will do that.
My poem has nothing to do with that, but I was thinking about that.
It's supposed to be about Easy Rider. Come on.
Yeah. My poem is entitled Roses Are Red, Violets Are Bloated. All right. I'm a spoke and word poet. Prefer a bike and an open mic to some cocaine or a motorcycle. Born to be mild. Last time I was in New Orleans, went to a poetry slam. I'm an easy writer. Just give me a pen and I extend.
I love that. That's great.
That's pretty much all I was going. But I was caught on the idea of being an easy writer, too. I can write a poem that will come out in you know, 20 minutes, 15 minutes. But I prefer a poem that I am working on for whatever, whether it's months, you know, like if I'm going to be, you know, like both I like. But I mean, I feel I would like more poets to even put more effort into both craftsmanship, the performance, and that at a certain extent for certain situations. Some poems come right out. Some poems obviously take years to write. But I was wondering, you know, like, does writing, do you think, come easy to you, or every time you do it, it is a challenge for you when you're writing? I can word play, obviously, very easily, I would say. That comes easy for me. But, you know, drawing obviously from the pain and the personal stories within my life, yeah, that not as easy.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's like maybe both, you know, both and. It comes easily and it's can be really grueling and hard work. So I think for me, it's always both, you know. Some people, I think that they don't like force it or whatever. And that's probably for the better, but I've definitely, you know, been addicted to writing.
Like, have you worked on like a single poem, and this goes to you, Renzo, for, you know, like months, or you, something is like, all right, done, and I don't go back to it?
Yes, but not in the way that you would think. Mm-hmm. You remember Ars Poetica? I was thinking about it in my head for months. And then when I sat down and wrote it, it's when I was ready to put it on paper and it just came out.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of my process for the most part.
Right.
But writing comes easily for me because I guess I'm a reader. So being a reader, I think, helps me be a writer. But it doesn't mean that it can't be grueling. It is. It's just I don't put pen to paper until I have it figured out in my head. And that's just the way that I work. You know, other people write and write and write, and then later they can form something cohesive. For some, it just comes easy. For some, struggle forever, and they come up with beautiful things.
I love the idea of being an easy writer, though. I think that's really, really good. I love that, too, because it's, like, edgy, you know, and very, like, earnest, and just how I feel a lot, too. Like, I'll go to the city, and to me, the poetry is the cool, dangerous, like, I mean, you know, thing to do to change the world. That's what I want to do in a city. I don't want to go to McDonald's. I don't want to get drunk. I want to go find the legends and, you know, see where they haunt.
and I know I mentioned I asked you guys the vehicle that you would choose to go cross country. For me, it may actually be a bike, because I always liked the idea of the spoken word poet. But one of my other friends and I, we want to try to do, I don't know if it's cross country, but you know, a very long extended, you know, bicycle ride and see how far. I mean, more physically taxing, but I'd be more inclined to do that than a motorbike.
Mm. You should do, like, I'm thinking, like, the tandem bike. like the two of y'all should do it.
Like the Muppets?
We could do it. I love Muppets. Oh my God. Jim Henson is so cool.
I'll do right it on. With you in the Loire Valley in France. We can go see castles.
Yeah. We could tour.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's be blessed by the Renzonator.
Yeah.
The Renzonator. Okay. This poem is called US-1 after Easy Rider. Mm. Their ruby red Corvettes idle and purr among the purchased nights of drunken glee. On freedom's highway, credit pays the toll, and someone else is charging what we spend. The Waffle House is filled with travelers too roughly dressed to get a table here. They're turned away in droves. The parking lot is filled with invitations left unsigned. I stand apart. My tailored suit demands the privilege a mohair blend can give, the admiration due to silken ties and hands kept soft by what remains untouched. I've sped past the police, their sirens faint, impressions that my passengers ignore until it's time to settle up accounts, until I see the lights in my rear view.
Ooh.
Cool.
Any poem with a Waffle House reference got my heart.
Yeah, you had me at Waffle House.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't wait to listen to this again and like revisit that because there was so much there. I got some of the like consumerist dystopia.
I don't really like to talk about, but yeah, it really was, what's the price of freedom? Who gets to enjoy it?
Mm.
Why is somebody at the Waffle House but not at this place with a table? Why do I have the privilege to ignore the police until they come knocking on my door? Right? That's some of the ideas that were in there for me.
I gotta say, I started this conversation in bed under covers, and now I'm standing up
wide awake
in front of a pull-out couch. This was lively and exciting and lot to chew on.
Well, that's because the heater at your hotel probably doesn't work.
No, you've warmed my heart tonight.
Aw, that's great. Yeah.
Yes.
No, you've warmed our hearts, Becca. I just want to take a moment and thank you for joining us here today at Real Poets. And I want to give you the opportunity to where we can find your work, anything that you'd like to promote, please. The mic is yours.
Well, thank you so much. Really, I'm trying to get off the socials, so
yeah. Don't find her there.
Catch her face to face.
Yeah, go IRL. Anyone listening, go IRL and go check out the Real Poets. They're going to be doing a writing workshop on February 22nd at a secret location in Fort Lauderdale from 1 to 3 o'clock. And we will be announcing that shortly, maybe even by the time the podcast goes live. Also be sure to come out February 21st, 4:30. We're going to have one of them as a mystery poet in a transcendental poetry tent. Mm. So you don't want to miss this.
And this will be at Light in the Dark Fest, correct? That's coming up.
That's right, 2026.
Woo! And then what are you working on these days? Are there any other project? Hey, not saying a whole festival is not a lot of things to fill your days, but what are you working on? Is there anything that you are focusing your creative energy on right now?
Just trying to figure out, you know, what to do to improve the world. So this has been totally rad and it's been a great journey, and I'm so glad that we turned the camera off because that's how people, you know, we got to just get back to the spirit. And
I've been looking in the mirror the whole time. So
there you go.
I mean, literally when I turn off my camera, it's my face. So I guess I'm looking in a mirror too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And my icon is my face.
I'm seeing it a little bit, actually. I am seeing that here. Yeah. And there.
But no, again, Becca, that generosity of spirit that you have and that desire to make anywhere you go a little bit better is one of the reasons that I value your friendship. So thank you very much for joining us here tonight at Real Poets and sharing Easy Rider with us and helping us see it through your eyes as well. And letting me dig into it a little deeper, because I didn't really question what I questioned on this viewing in terms of, are they rebels? Are they compliant? What does it mean to be free? And I think that has been really eye-opening for me. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, yes, word up. You. Likewise. Yeah, just keep up the good fight. And I have a lot of high hope.
I hope. And real quick, what's one way that you keep it real?
Me? How do I keep it real? Yeah. I think that's to be determined.
It's okay. It's okay. We will keep it real.
Admitting when you don't
enough.
Know something is one of the realest things.
Right? I don't know. Yeah. Glad we're on the same wavelength. I hope to, hike the desert next time we do it.
Well, everyone, that was Becca Joseph. I am Renzo del Castillo, and with me always is
She Raven Scott in Reverse with the Verses.
We have been real poets, and please always keep it real.
Keep it real.
Real Poets is produced and hosted by Renzo del Castillo and Scott Raven. Original music composed by Gabby Weitzenfeld. Episode art and visuals by the Real Poets team. New episodes come out every other Thursday. Hit subscribe, download the episode, and leave a review to help us grow. This has been a Real Poets production. And remember to always keep it real.
Free time to do what you want, free speech, place to say what you want to say, free fall, falling from the air, free toys, free books, free lunch. When something is free, it doesn't cost a thing. I'm sure glad we're free, so let freedom ring. Free samples, free play, free ride, getting away scot-free means not having to pay your taxes. If we're feeling carefree, everyone relaxes and doesn't have to worry about a thing. Boy, it sure is nice to be free, so let freedom ring. We all live in a free country, free to walk, free to talk, free to dance, free to sing. If you happen to be free, show me how you let freedom ring.